Welcome back to the podcast. This is Megan Swan, your host, and today I wrapped up an inspiring session with Jane Ballard. Jane shared her empowering journey to living alcohol-free and how it transformed her life. We dove into the impact of sobriety on mental health, anxiety, and self-confidence. Jane also teased some exciting retreats and coaching opportunities she has in the works. Trust me, her story is a powerful reminder to never stop dreaming and to always stay curious. Check out the whole episode. Welcome back to Wellness as a Way of Life, the less is more source of wellness, knowledge, wisdom, and inspiration for modern women and female founders. Here, we teach you why not all wellness trends are for you, how to figure out which ones are, and how to best adapt them for your personal wellness toolbox. I'm your host, Megan Swan. With more than a decade of experience in the wellness industry and on my own personal journey, I will teach you how to tune into and trust your intuition and drown out all the noise. I love to support female founders in the process of building their business to strategically optimize their physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual wellness. I have helped hundreds of women establish wellness as a way of life with my less is more approach. Join me on my mission to make wellness a way of life. Let's dive in. Jane, so excited to have you on the podcast and talk to you about all things beautiful about living alcohol-free and your whole experience in your professional work. So let's start with, how are you?
Yeah, I'm great. I am so happy to be on your podcast today, and thank you for asking me to share. It means a lot to be here.
Yeah, I love that painting in the background, by the way. It's very...
Oh, thank you. I love the war shocks. You know, my psychology background, it's anything that is like, has been smashed together and then has symmetrical sides. I love it.
Yeah, brilliant. So let's go a little bit back into, if you can take us to the process or your decision, were there any sort of flashpoints that you decided that maybe living without alcohol might be a good idea for you?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I, like many people of my Gen X generation, started drinking back in my teenage years. And it was just a way of life. It was the culture. And, you know, I had some negative experiences, shall we say, but they didn't stand out. And I have always been somebody who was very conscientious and driven to function well. And so I think that I really managed drinking in a way that appeared normal and very functional. And, you know, that went on for about several decades, you know, and I think in the last 10 years or so, I've drank less, but it has become more apparent to me that it didn't align with my values when I did drink to a point of excess and have negative consequences. And to me, one of the most disturbing parts of drinking is memory loss, whether it's a full-on blackout or a brownout or even just fuzzy, like, what did I say? Or how did that conversation end? To me, you know, integrity is really important. Being consistently aligned with my values and treating myself and others with kindness and compassion and respect. And when alcohol is on board, you know, our prefrontal cortex is, you know, less active, and our ability to have good insight and judgment into our behavior is impaired. And I just didn't like how that felt. And, you know, back, I would say I began this journey post-pandemic, probably 2021, of really working on myself and doing a lot of work on, you know, what am I doing in this life? What is my purpose here? Who do I want to be? How do I want to live? I don't want to be on autopilot. I want to really live fully and completely and authentically into the person that I was given the resources to become. And I started kind of having these thoughts that maybe alcohol is inconsistent with that. But, you know, I remember my therapist at one point, I was talking to him about this, and he was like, well, what do you think about just maybe experimenting with going alcohol free for maybe 30 days, 60 days, 90 days? And I was like, no, I don't think that's necessary. I was like, I like my red wine and my margaritas too much. I don't think I need to do that. And I remember that because it wasn't too much later that I woke up one morning and just felt this complete and total clarity that I needed to release alcohol from my life in order to become who I am meant to be and to really feel a sense of satisfaction and completeness. And not only was it that realization, but it was the complete lack of attachment to alcohol any longer. Like, I no longer felt that dissonance or that pull or this back and forth, you know, this thought of like, well, what if this, then you're, you know, what about when you go to Italy and you want to drink wine in Tuscany or, you know, whatever, I have no plans to go to Italy anytime soon. So, but there was none of that. It was just like complete clarity and non-attachment. And it felt like a spiritual experience. Like, I just had this epiphany moment and I could see what had always been there with complete clarity. And that was about 20 months ago, 21 months ago now, probably. And I just haven't looked back. I've just kept taking it one step at a time and trusting that I'm on the right path.
Yeah. So many threads I can pull on there. We have a lot of a similar story. And I love that you pull the memory piece, the, you know, being integral with your word. You know, those were all things for me, particularly as a parent, because I also grew up
yes.
with I remember still this experience as a teenager, feeling like I had a heart to heart with one of my parents and realizing the next day that clearly they had zero recollection of the entire
conversation. They didn't remember it. Yeah. And then it completely takes away like the value of that conversation.
Yeah. And
you
like,
know, you think you're having this deep moment of connection and they don't even recall.
Yeah. And I just, I love your story, but for me, the sort of spiritual clarity, I think, came a little bit later. It came more out of this, like, I know I can be a better parent and I don't see how that's going to happen if I still have alcohol in my life. Like, I just, yeah. So
yeah, it's unpredictable if there's alcohol. You can't be sure. You can't trust yourself with 100% certainty that you will be the parent you want to be if there's this variable of alcohol.
Yes. And so I'm so happy you have this therapist that kind of challenged you on that and like planted the seed
for sure.
I'd love, because you're in the same profession, like, what for you is it this elephant in the room that a lot of therapists don't necessarily bring into the conversation, or do you feel like that's changing
as far as self-disclosure? Or no, you're talking about going alcohol free.
Yeah, like that doesn't seem like the thing that like your average therapist would necessarily suggest.
Yes. Yeah, that is a really good point. I think that it still is very much the elephant in the room for some therapists, especially if the client presents and alcohol is not something that they are identifying as an issue or they feel like it's going well. I feel like healthcare in general, almost like there's this exception with alcohol. You know, like, we'll talk about all these other lifestyle factors that maybe are contributing to issues, but we're not going to talk about alcohol. It's the exception. We don't touch that. And I think that is shifting a little bit, but it's probably still a small percentage of therapists who are going to be like, oh, well, let's get curious about this like neurotoxin that you're consuming on a weekly basis that is a central nervous system depressant and leads to lower baseline, what's the word I'm looking for? Dopamine. There we go. Dopamine.
Yeah, joy.
Feelings of good. Let's get curious about that. And then leads to anxiety and hangxiety and all the things. And so I think that's a really good thing for you to catch, that a lot of times therapists are hesitant to bring it up, either because of their own unconscious biases or attachments to it, or them perceiving the client is just not open to that.
Yeah. And I mean, I think there's a lot of points that we can make there in that, in how they're trained as well. But I one thing I do want to say, to be fair to therapists, is that, you know, we're also socialized to completely downplay what role it's playing or how much we're consuming, and which goes to, like, when you're a high functioning alcoholic, which is how I define myself. I don't know if that's a label that you would take on, but I mean, in strange parts of my life, I was even proud of my tolerance, but was many situations I would have been completely unaware of how much I was consuming. So you're not even giving them a fair picture, probably, of
right.
how it's, you know, what part it's playing in your life.
Right. So I'm a therapist. For your listeners, I don't know if I made that clear, but I'm a therapist. And so, you know, years ago when I was doing my training and I worked with a mentor when I was working towards my advanced licensure, and he was in AA. He had been sober for like 30, 40 years. And I don't remember what we were talking about, but he was like, "You want to know how you know when an addict is lying?" And I was like, "Yeah, how?" And he's like, "Their lips are moving," which is not very nice. But I think, to your point, people aren't necessarily going to come in and say, "Yeah, I'm drinking two bottles of wine a night." They're going to be like, "Yeah, I have a glass of wine a night, sometimes two or three." You know, they're portraying themselves in a way that feels congruent to how they see themselves, and not necessarily just coming out with all the stuff.
Yeah. And I guess society contributes to that, right? Like, oh,
I just
had someone say, yeah, I wasn't drinking much. It was just like four glasses of wine. And like, also, like, what does everybody consider a lot is a sliding scale, right? So
right.
I think it's like this Pandora's box. That's often, if you don't have any direct training on how to address it, it's really hard to, so kudos to your therapist. I'm glad he planted that seed for you.
Yes, for sure.
So I'd love, you talked about how alcohol impacts our anxiety levels, you know, certainly the next day and the anxiety. What have you noticed personally for you that's shifted?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think for me, part of why I started drinking in the first place as a teenager is because it helped me feel better in social situations. I have always been more introverted, more reserved temperamentally. And so it was harder for me, even though I wanted to let loose, I just couldn't do it. And I think alcohol, it was the magic elixir. You know, it alleviated any inability to just let loose and have fun. And I think that, so I would say social anxiety probably played a huge role in that. And I think that I just developed this habit, really, of drinking in social situations, as most people in our culture do. It was readily available, always at every social situation. And so I really prevented myself from having the opportunity to learn that I could socialize just fine and have a great time without alcohol. And so the biggest thing for me is just the freedom that I feel, that I no longer feel the need to drink in social situations. And if you look at cognitive behavioral therapy and this evidence-based technique for alleviating anxiety, the way that you do that is through exposure. You expose somebody to the anxiety-provoking situation, and then they resist the urge from engaging in whatever rituals or safety behaviors that they normally would to get them through that situation. And so living alcohol-free is just one massive exposure. And I think that can sound intimidating, but we can titrate our exposures and gradually increase our exposures. So, you know, for somebody who's thinking about going alcohol-free, they may not want to do that the week before their daughter's wedding or something. Maybe they do, and they just want to jump right in. But maybe you do that, and then you kind of like, okay, well, I'll go to this neighborhood get together this week. And then maybe next week I'll go on a girl's dinner. And then maybe the next week I'll go to a friend's birthday party. you know, and you gradually go into these social settings and you practice socializing without it. And not only does this work through habituation, where you repeatedly expose yourself to something and your brain is just less sensitive to it, but also there's this theory called inhibitory learning, where, you know, I probably had this one neuropathway in my brain that said you need alcohol to socialize. And that pathway was just traveled over and over and over again, hundreds and thousands of times over several decades. And then you quit traveling down that pathway and you start this new neuropathway that says, actually, I can go into social settings without alcohol and it's uncomfortable for about 20 minutes and it takes me a second to warm up. But then, you know, I kind of let loose and I become less self-conscious and I'm not thinking about myself. I'm engaged with other people and it's actually pretty fun. And then I'm not hungover the next day. And so then that neuropathway inhibits the former neuropathway. And you begin to have this new belief about yourself that you don't really need alcohol. It was just an illusion anyway. And so I would say in my own life, that's the biggest way that I've had relief from anxiety. It's just, I feel freer in social settings. And I think some of that also comes with age. You know, I'm in my mid 40s. And so I've had, you know, more time to just figure out who I am and be comfortable with that and know that not everyone's going to love me yet. But most people are probably going to like me, and that's great.
Totally. And back to your original point about memory, right? Like you're removing that next day anxiety or rumination of like, oh, what did I say? Did, you know, I hope she didn't read the expression on my face about what I was really thinking when she shared that news or he shared, you know,
yes,
like all the sort of the replaying.
The anxiety.
Yes.
That's probably the second biggest piece. And that was probably more of an issue for me back in my 20s and 30s when I had more weekends, when I would really go out and drink more and really have some regrets of just waking up and, you know, ruminating about the night, replaying conversations, putting bits and pieces back together when I couldn't remember entire conversations, you know, having like visceral feeling, like experiences of shame, like sitting there in my bed and feeling my face getting hot and blushing, just remembering and like, oh, and to never have to do that again is pretty priceless, you know, to never have to wonder. And I think there's two things going on with anxiety. One is what I just described, where there are actual circumstances that lead to embarrassment and anxiety and shame. But then I think neurochemically, there's also something going on there that even exacerbates that feeling of, you know, our dopamine levels have been artificially heightened. And so our bodies naturally want to achieve homeostasis. And so our body is then trying to regulate and figure out what's happening with this crazy dopamine spike. And so then we start releasing dynorphin, which is kind of like has the opposite effect of dopamine and makes us feel down and maybe kind of have this rigid thinking and feel anxious and distressed. So then we have all this dynorphin spiking. So the next day we're feeling terrible. We don't have that feeling of freedom and creativity and I can be whoever I want. No, we feel like, holy shit, what have I just done? And so our biochemistry is working against us in those moments.
Yeah. Lastly, I'd love to, because to me, that all comes back to my experience as well. And I'm sure I'd love to hear your thoughts on, you know, not having to deal with that cycle, how it's affected your confidence as a woman.
Yeah. You know, I think my confidence is healed and it's in a place where I don't think I ever even imagined I could have this kind of freedom and feeling confident. Not that I'm always confident. I do still probably on a daily basis have moments of insecurity, but I would say on a macro level, I trust who I am and I know that I will be consistent. I think it's all about consistency and knowing that I am going to present myself in a consistent way every single time. I might still put my foot in my mouth or engage in gossip or make mistakes, but I'm going to remember fully what I did and I'm going to know that I did it within Jane's sober parameters, not Jane's intoxicated parameters, which are much wider. And then I'm going to be able to go back and repair that situation because I can remember it with clarity and I'm going to feel confident that I can address it. And so I think just not living with that feeling of insecurity of, oh, this person, if they're probably offended them, or I feel icky about what I said, you know, just having freedom from that allows your confidence not to be taking two steps forward, one step back, two steps forward, five steps back, you know, this constant just roller coaster. It's like, no, I can just take steps forward now. And I don't really have these big steps backwards. I have occasional steps backwards that are, you know, repairable.
Yes. I love that. The painting of that picture it really resonates. So tell us more about what you're doing these days and how you're working to help other, is it mostly women that you work with?
Mostly, I would say mostly women, although I love working with men as well. I have several male clients too. So I've been a therapist I graduated from grad school 20 years ago, which is crazy. It's 20 years ago last month. And I have been working in a private practice for the last 7 years. I've worked in different settings, psychiatric hospitals and different things like that. And my primary focus in my practice is anxiety, OCD, eating disorders, and perinatal mental health. I have a perinatal mental health certification, and I'm a certified eating disorder specialist. And when I gave up alcohol in the fall of 2022, I began to think about how I might be able to incorporate sharing this way of life with other women and men as well. And I went on a retreat in Bali back in the spring of 2023 and just had the most unexpectedly healing experience. You know, it was fun. It was this beautiful place. You're in this culture that is so different than your own. And it really gave me the freedom to be able to see myself with more objectivity and clarity. And I came back from that and thought, wow, what if I could do that too? What if I could lead a retreat like that? I really want to go back to Bali, but I can't just justify going on Bali retreats every year. But if I led one, you know, that could also give me an opportunity to go back and share this experience with other women. So I started working with a business coach and partnering with a retreat company, Soulless Journeys, Marie and Reddy, who are awesome. I partnered with them and led this retreat in Bali in April of this year. And now I'm planning Bali 2025. And that got me thinking, like, how else can I do this? I would love to be able to reach women on a broader scale. You know, in my therapy practice, I see people virtually, but primarily I see people in the office, in person. And with my license, I can work with women and men, couples, whoever, who are located in Texas, but that really limits me to be able to reach other people, you know, in other parts of the world. And so I started thinking, well, maybe I could do some coaching as well, maybe do some groups, some individual, create an online platform where I can reach more people. And so that's currently in the works. And then I've got a podcast, Mindful Sobriety, the podcast, that I co-host with a dear friend who I met through alcohol-free circles here in Dallas. And so I don't know. I think the sky's the limit, but I feel inspired. And I think that, you know, inspiration just drives us to want to reach out. And so right now I'm just focused on connecting and providing a space for people who might be interested in this lifestyle and want to know more.
You're such a beautiful person inside and out. I'm so happy that we met, and hopefully are you gonna be in Palm Springs so I get to meet you?
Yes, I will be in Palm Springs. And I'm thinking about going early.
We got to talk about Bali because that's like the last piece in my twisted eat, pray, love story. Still haven't been to Bali.
You got to go.
At this point, it's going to be a retreat that takes me there, and whether I'm actually working it or enjoying it, I don't know, but we'll, we need to talk more about Bali.
We need to talk. Yes. Living Your Purpose, Bali 2025, April 4th through 11th is on the books. And so maybe you need to figure out a way to join me.
That is right before my birthday. Okay.
That'd be a good gift.
All right. Well, we'll share in the show notes all of the links to everything that you're doing and offering and all the ways to connect with you. Any last, you know, bits of wisdom that you want to leave the audience?
I just want to say, never stop dreaming and never believe that things that you hear other people doing aren't for you. You know, I think that I used to have a tendency to think, oh, but you know, that must be nice, but I don't think I could do something like that because I've got three kids or I've got this job or, and I kind of did that to myself with the Bali retreat that I went to initially in 2023 of like, oh, I really want to go on this, but I've got this private practice. I can't just leave my clients. And my youngest was four at the time. And I was like, I can't leave her for over a week. And then I started thinking, but why? What if I did? What is the worst that would happen? And so I think I would just say, if you think something isn't for you, stop and get curious about that and reflect on it. And I think three of the most powerful questions you can ask yourself with those types of thoughts is, what is the worst that could happen? And how would I cope? You have to ask yourself how you would cope, because usually we're like, well, it would just be awful. I couldn't handle it. And then what is the best that could happen? And then what is most likely to happen? And usually what is most likely to happen is much closer to the best case scenario than the worst case scenario. We often confuse something that's possible to happen with likely. It's usually not likely. And so I would just say, catch yourself in those thoughts and get curious about it. Don't limit yourself.
I have goosebumps. I love that. Well, thank you so much for being here, and we'll be in touch.
Yes, thank you, Megan. This has been awesome.
Hey there. One last thing I wanted to share with you. If you're enjoying this podcast, it would mean so much to me if you could rate and review it on your favorite podcast platform. It really does help us grow the show, and this being so important to me to get this message out to more women to help them optimize their wellness and ultimately their lives. This is my mission, and I would greatly appreciate it if you could support the podcast by rating and reviewing. Thanks in advance. Have a good one.